Love Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I'm still
say. It's a song by Shout Even Shy. Lyrics that I wrote. There, Deb. Welcome back, my friends, to the show where I pretend to be someone I'm not. It is the year of our Lord, 2021, Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to everybody. I'm here with my friend, my little sister. Yeah, my little sister, Deborah. Hi, Deb. She does all the heavy lifting in the back so I can sit out here and look pretty. Thank you, Deborah.
Pleasure.
This time of year, you need to look around. I haven't done it this year. I've not been able to do it. But I'd collect coats or go through my closet and what coats I haven't worn in 2 years. I'd go find a homeless camp, which is not hard to find. I'd buy back in the day, you find the dollar burger wars, maybe about 20 of them, bag of fries, and go find a homeless camp and hand it out to them, some coats and blankets. Merry Christmas. It's a selfless act, and it means there's nothing as cold as the cold when you're homeless. It's soul shaking. But anyway, reach out, help somebody that you don't know. Be careful when you do. Christmas Eve. Memories of I've mentioned before, my dad's side of the family is absolutely huge. There were 12 boys, 12 uncles and aunts on my dad's side. So you can think of how many cousins. We would get together every Christmas Eve. And basically once a year, I'd see most of the cousins. And as we grew older, it became more of a traditional thing. And when my dad passed away, it ended. I didn't realize it was because of my dad organizing the party that happened every year. And when he was gone, it didn't happen. So God bless you, Dad, for the memories of cousins. Tonight, it's open poetry. We're going to have some people call in at their leisure. I was at another station earlier. They're going to be stopping by. And we're going to be playing Pavlov's Dog. You hear a bell, you bark, and you take a shot. The libation for tonight for me is Kessler's. I've got the whiskey. Yep.
Sounds like cold medicine. So listen, speaking of that dynamic duo, say hello.
Yeah. The Andorians. Mr. Andrew K. and his wife, Mrs. Nemesis. Hi, guys.
They have more names.
Yeah.
I nickname everybody. Everybody. That's how I remember. I won't remember your name. I remember Mr. Andrew K.
Yeah, but they got like the dynamic duo, Mr. and Mrs. Nemesis. Stephen and or K or Mr. and Mrs. Andrew K, and I could go on. That's funny. But I have a 11111 here as well.
AP Taylor?
Wonder. It might be Raconteur. I don't know. It could be a Raconteur.
I don't
know. That's
a good guess.
Hi, Rack.
The Andorians. I like that. And or K. And or?
I prefer being called K.
If it's
okay.
Okay,
so who's got the white Christmas? Who's got a white Christmas? Anybody?
Not here.
Snowing? Not yet, huh?
50 degrees and rain.
We have a chance of having a white Christmas here.
Okay.
Wow.
Apparently. The cold front is coming down from Alaska. From Alaska is pretty damn cold. Snow level is going to be down below 3,000 feet. And I'm right under 3,000. This will be the third. If it happens to be the third in my lifetime that I remember having snow on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. So it does happen once in a while.
Cool.
Nothing I got to shovel, though. Thank you. But
well, you know why?
Hey, Hatter. Right, you know, as far as your game goes, does it count if I bark?
Yeah, everybody. When you hear a bell, you bark and take a shot, and we can carry on.
Oh, it's the bell, not the bark. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
It's a bar game. Usually, when the house is buying drinks, the waitress will go around and. Pour drinks, shots for everybody, and then when you hear the bell, they ring a bell. Everybody barks like a dog and carries on. Take the shot.
We're having a green Christmas here. I know exactly why we're having a green Christmas. Mm-hmm. Because
why?
I bought a snowblower. I own a snowblower now, so. It's not
uh-huh.
Now that you don't
never
need
get to use it now.
It'll never snow again, yeah. We're dying to use
it. She prefers to be called Kay.
Is it a big one or is it one of them little ones they advertise, the little...
I have a very small driveway, so I just got a little electric job, but it'll do the trick if
cool.
I ever get a chance to use it.
Hey, sounds like fun. Sounds like the first time when the weed eaters came out. Oh man, it was go out and meet each, that lasted about a week, and nobody wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
No, my first business was a landscaping company, and I started. Okay.
Well, you can block that in and out.
I gotta tell.
We didn't have any blowers. Weed eaters were new. So, a lot of raking, a lot of hand stuff. I mean, these guys nowadays have it easy. We have a gardener comes by 7:30 in a flipping morning, Tuesdays.
Hey, Stephen, I got a story about your not necessarily yours, but my friend suggested that I get one of those electric shovels when I had a house, and I was very skeptical because, you know, it's got the smaller footprint and everything, and it's not, but, you know, the only benefit to me was that, you know, you don't have to keep filling it up with gas, you just plug it in. But I'll be damned, the thing worked better than anything I ever saw. The red one, I think it was a Toro, whatever the brand was, it was under $100, and man, it threw that wet snow 15 feet without trouble. And if it was too deep, you know, I just did it in layers, you know, you didn't have to push all the way down to the ground. It worked amazingly well. You know, it was you're gonna be real happy when you get to use it, if you get to use it, I should say.
What do those things have on it? Is it like a Briggs and Benton?
Briggs and I don't know what kind of engine it had. It was just, you know, it was like a 15 inch path. You know, it wasn't that wide, but you know, whatever it grabbed, it threw it. It was great.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to, you know, wheeze and just be ineffective, but the thing worked fantastic.
So it's all about the throw, isn't it? How far did that?
Yeah.
You can throw that stuff.
Because it's no good if it only, like, you know, spits in an inch, you know? That's kind of stupid and pointless.
I couldn't imagine digging myself out every morning just to go to work. No, thank you.
That would be horrible. So, Heather, listen, your favorite duo just finished their own shows, and I'm sure they have some stuff to do. So I think Stephen has a gift for you.
Ah, Stephen brought gifts. Yeah, I realize you guys got a traditional type of evening, right?
Yes, actually, exactly. I have an appointment with Alistair Sim very shortly to watch a Christmas Carol. So
we can tag
Christmas
along. We can tag along.
To make popcorn?
No, I go cheese and crackers and a local winery.
Even better.
The St. Nicholas Holiday Blush. So I drink the holiday blush and eat my cheese and crackers and watch Scrooge every Christmas.
Do you eat Ritz? Do you eat Ritz, Stephen? Something on a Ritz?
Yes, of course on a Ritz. Yes, definitely.
Have you ever dipped a Ritz in Hidden Valley Ranch dressing?
No.
To die for. Just saying.
Really? I like Ritz. Buttery.
Oh, yes.
Everything tastes good when it's
anyway.
Just on a Ritz.
Right. So, anyway, let's let Stephen read so he can go have his cheese and crackers and snuggle with his honey and watch a movie.
All right. Well, since I'm going to be watching A Christmas Carol, I brought one of my poems that was inspired by A Christmas Carol. It was actually for one of Sweet Pea's shows where you picked up the book and read line 4, page 18, and that line, the book A Christmas Carol, was right next to me, and the line was, Scrooge knew this, by the smart sound its teeth made when the jaws were brought together by the bandage. And I call this underdone potatoes don't have teeth, because if you remember, Scrooge said that it might be a trick of the stomach, could be an underdone potato that caused him to see the ghost.
Hey, Marley.
It was the snap of the teeth that brought it to life, a noise that I'll never forget, the gnashing of teeth as the knot was drawn tight when ghostly molars had met. In life I had known him, but he is now dead. My eyes back then never did wet. Personal gain and greed were all that I knew. A lesson must now be learned. I have created a chain, ponderous and long, a punishment through action so earned. That clacking enamel, as its mouth was drawn close, made me realize this was real. Three more apparitions will visit me now. Of this I know not what to feel. It's gone out the window, and more spirits have joined him. They all sing a terrible dirge. These three apparitions will come now to teach me. Hopefully sins will be purged. End poem.
Yeah, I forgot the chains. He's going, yeah, his name was Marley, wasn't it?
That was his partner, yeah.
Marley. Yeah, partner. Yeah, it was the snap of the teeth that brought it to life. Why the teeth? Is there something I'm missing?
Well,
no, that was
in the book. In the book, when he takes the bandage off, his jaw drops. And when he's getting ready to leave and he tightens the bandage up again, his teeth clack shut really loud.
Ah, the book. Excellent.
I think it's cool that he put teeth there because usually when you think of a potato, you think of eyes. So I think the contradiction of having teeth there instead of eyes is enough to draw the reader in to find out what the heck's going on there, you know? And then the poem is really cool. But I love, hopefully sins will be purged. Yeah, hopefully. But the picture's cool. The title's cool. Personal gain and greed, we're all that. I knew a lesson must now be learned. And sometimes we forget that people's actions is sometimes all they know, and nobody's ever taken the time to show them anything different. So that part made me think of that. Like that bully, he's bullying, but got to wonder who's bullying him at home. Not that that's an excuse, but it's a vicious circle, that chain. This is really cool, and it makes you think, but in a clever way. And like I said, I can't say enough. That contrast with potatoes and teeth. Kind of brilliant, dude.
Yeah. I always tried to, the Christmas specials, I always wanted the Christmas Carol with Jim Backus, you know, the cartoon.
Oh, Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
We watched that a couple weeks ago.
Magoo, you've done it again.
I have a question before we get Stephen another comment. Has anybody looked at the topic board for the new show, Crapshoot, that starts, it'll be out on the 28th, Tuesday night the 28th? The reason I ask is because the topic's really cool. You don't have to write a poem or anything. You just pick a famous celebrity who died too young and research them a little bit and then call. And at that show, you'll be that person, and Hatter and Gress will act as if they're interviewing you. For example, say Stephen chose Elvis. He's good at Elvis impressions. I'm not. So if he wanted to talk in the Elvis voice. But anyway, you don't have to write a poem. So just if you have somebody that you think might be fun to do that, if you could just message Gress so they have time to research that person too and come up with some questions to ask you in your interview. It should be really fun. So I just wanted to toss that out there. How about if we get a comment from Rack for Stephen?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the story well, and I do remember that you know, when he's trying to reason away what the ghost, you know, maybe it was. I remember it more from the cartoon than the book, you know, but, you know, reasoning him away about something that he ate, you know, I do remember that very vividly. And, you know, the people that you interact with in life usually have some sort of, personality quirk or something about them that just, it's kind of a signature thing that you remember about them, you know, the clanking of the teeth in this instance. So tying all that together into his story, And you know, the thought behind the chain and everything else that's brought into the story is really very frightening if you think about it, because, you know, it reminds you of you know, the idea that the time we spend on this earth is just a speck, and, you know, it's what we have waiting for us that we should really be worried about. You know, it's living here is you know, a day by day thing, but it's really infinitesimal compared to eternity. So, you know, it's like you need to worry about the rest of your life, not what's going on right now. You know, it's just one of those things that to me, you know, it reminds you about, you know, purpose and doing the right thing. So, you know, this is a great write, great subject, great book.
Thank you very much.
Awesome comment. Sounds like Taser liked it too, or maybe that was Queen Elizabeth. Not sure. Victoria. Victoria. There you go. So, Hatter, did you comment for Stephen?
Continue what Rack was saying. Yeah, there's more to our consciousness of why we are. What's the word when you know who you are?
And self-awareness.
Like animal. Self-awareness. Well, they can't explain. They know what the brain is. They know how it works, but they don't know why we have one. I mean, why is there consciousness? And why is there the feelings and emotions that we have that control our life? That is a hint of that there is something beyond this plane of existence. If you could explain to us what consciousness is, you could probably explain why there is something that's waiting for us. It's faith. A lot of theories of why we're here on this earth and this plane, but. That's a good point.
Indeed.
Is Kay still here to comment? And did she bring this? Or you guys just going to get to that movie?
He's too tired. I don't
want
to read anymore.
No problem.
She's a sleepy one.
I'm just glad you called. Do you want to comment first, Stephen, or?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I know it's your favorite story. So, yeah, I know you spoke to that very well. The story, it does have its pivotal moral, and I know that you were drawn on that. So, yeah, it's a great write.
It's my favorite back and forth between him and Marley. I love that whole interaction.
So, Stephen, before you and your lovely wife go snuggle up for the movie and cheese and crackers, will you tell us what's happening for the last week of the year at Poetic Slam?
The last week. Well, tomorrow night is 8 p.m. with Sky. And it's a special edition of Dungeons & Dragons, a Christmas edition. You do have to request a prompt from her and then write to it, of course. And that's at 8 p.m. 7:30 p.m. on Monday is the Mortuary of Shadows, and we're going with Open Dark Poetry. And let's see, what's Wednesday is the Inklings, and it's a new artist that Kay found. I'm trying to find it here. What's her name? You're bumping folders, so I can't see. She's a Canadian artist.
Shauna Urbach.
I just found it, yes. Shauna Urbach. She's got really cool paintings to write to. That's Wednesday night at 10. Movement of Sound next Thursday is The Doors.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to listen to The Doors. We're going to learn about those songs and read some poetry inspired by those songs. And that's it, right? Well, and a New Year's party on New Year's Eve just to hang out and say Happy New Year, just kind of like we did tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Bring a poem associated with that kind of thing, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
Well, awesome sauce. Hatter's putting the wrong number on the board, just saying.
I put the wrong number.
I'm looking forward to seeing the new artist. I always seem extremely inspired by the artists that you found. Okay, so I'm looking forward to that. But I appreciate you both for calling. Enjoy the movie. Merry Christmas. Love and respect.
Yeah.
Love and respect. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Good night, everybody.
Alrighty.
So, Raconteur, did you bring a gift? I could download something, or are we just going to hang out and have some fun with us and chat for a bit?
My Christmas poem, the one that comes to mind is I think it was a word bank from you, actually, but it's depressing.
Oh, yes?
If you want it, it's called Christmas Stalking, S-T-A-L-K.
I'll go find it while you guys check.
Yeah, it speaks exactly what you were talking about, Hatter, and being alone on Christmas and everything. And, you know, what is it that the statistics say? More than 50% of marriages fail now, or 50%. So, you know, the aftermath of that and being alone after that, and, you know, that's kind of the direction that I took it, because you feel it, like I'm sure you're well aware. It's just one of those things.
I found it. I remember the photo. Okay, so I'm going to load that down right now. And how come Hatter's so quiet?
I hope, because my screen froze. The damn thing.
Oh. I thought you said it was warm. That was a double shot.
Oh, that would hurt. Oh. Kessler's, yeah. It's been a while. It's been a long time.
I was
going to
sleep
right.
Well tonight.
Yep.
I got black cherry bourbon.
My Christmas
for the
present
season.
Was a bottle of whiskey and a big pillow. Can't wait.
Well, I you know, for the holidays it's called Red Stag, so.
Sounds cool.
Oh, Deb, you'd love it. It's smooth. It's drinking whiskey. But I think Jim
Beam
makes
it. The best whiskey I had ever tasted, I was working at a liquor store years and years ago, and they had a bottle of corn mash whiskey, and it was in one of those, it was the jugs that they put the
the ones that the jug bands play. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Those jugs. Well, it was a miniature one. It was about half the size. And came in that. It was the best. And I kept the decanter for years and years, and I never could figure out who made the thing, what whiskey it was. But it was corn mash whiskey, and it was good.
Yeah, corn mash makes corn syrup. So I imagine it was a little sweet.
It was, I don't know what to say. It was woody. It was woody.
Mm.
So I don't
know if that's the
angel's cut or the devil's cut. The angel's cut or the devil's cut.
Yeah.
Devil's end of the barrel, I think.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Excellent. And then the mash is the name of what the process they go through with the to distill it.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, in the distilling process, when they take the raw materials, that part of it is, it's called a mash, and I think that's what emits the vapors, where you get the angel's cut, and the liquid left behind is the actual, after you filter it and whatnot, it's the liquor, and then the bottom of that is the devil's cut, I think.
I think you're right. Yeah, and they're all minimum of 12 years old. So the barrels have been sitting in the warehouse.
I like when they get clever with that stuff. They'll take a barrel that was used to make bourbon and they'll put something else in it to get that extra flavor. They do that with wine. It's aged in the oak casks that are used to do something else, so you get that added flavor to it.
What's the difference between the bourbon and a whiskey?
Not entirely sure.
I think the bourbon is what you call a blend.
Okay. It's funny because I didn't know that about the Scotch, that the Johnny Walker, the red is blended and the black is straight. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's some really good cognac too, the Glenlivet, the Scotch, and then the cognac. I don't know the name of it, but
Maker's Mark, is that really cognac? Or is that bourbon?
I think it's what was the name again?
Maker's Mark.
I think that's a Scotch.
Okay.
Not sure, but. We should take the shredded cigars, and you would dip the end in a small shot glass of cognac, and do it three or four times, to where it's nice and soaked, and then light the cigar.
Mm.
Very tasty. but anyway.
I know people that do that with CBD oil and joints. They let them dry out. They double the potency.
Right. That's my medicine.
Yeah.
So what's okay? Let's go to Iraq. Consider your best Christmas Eve memory.
Wow. I have to really dig back. I don't know. Holidays and me are pretty. we don't mix too well. I have a better shot at a Thanksgiving memory than a Christmas memory. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
I have a cousin. I have a cousin named Danny, and he's a year older than I am. And when we would get together. We'd always get in trouble somehow. Two Christmas Eves, not in a row. I think there was a year between. We were brought home in a sheriff's car, and that didn't go down well. No, you know they said get in, we'll take you back because we were roaming the streets in North Highlands, which is not the best place to be. But sheriff drives by. What are you guys doing? Nothing. Where do you belong? And my dad being a cop, but you know, they said cops said they didn't do anything. We just got him home. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. We didn't do anything. We got put in the back seat of the sheriff.
Yeah.
So after that, everybody kept an eye on us. We weren't allowed to leave the property.
The troublemakers.
Yeah, basically. They said Danny was the bomb, I was the fuse. Get them together, something was going to go off.
That's nice that you were able to do that with your cousins. My cousins lived, you know, a borough away, if you know about Brooklyn and Staten Island.
Yeah, Danny and I were basically the same, born in the same mold. Same personality.
My cousins
were Yeah, and every time we got together, it was like we were doing something we shouldn't be doing. I don't know how that happens.
My mom only had one sister, and she died too young. She passed away. She had a brain tumor or something, and I didn't know how sick she was, and you know, she was up in the hospital bed. And they were like, "You want to go up and say and talk to her?" I'm like, "I'll see her when she gets out." And then she passed away. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm never gonna get over that." She was my godmother.
I dodged a bullet on that. I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I'll tell you what, those words, just those words told to you by a doctor, changes your life immediately. You start reflecting on everything. There was quite a bit of time before I knew, the time I was told to the operation, to where they knew it was cancerous or not. It was quite the ordeal. That's when I wrote Left Alone, the story of Will, when I was left alone with that guy in the room. That's why I had just had the brain. I had the brain tumor removed. And it came back non-cancerous, so it was like the weight was off my shoulders. I loved my wife even more, and you know.
Yeah, it makes life sweeter.
It does. I look around and see how much I had. You know, I had everything. I had everything I ever wanted, and most of what I needed. I mean, no, sorry, I had everything I needed, and most of what I ever wanted. I figured I dodged the bullet there, so I can really relate to when you're told that it's like
one of my best friends has got cancer. He's been living with it for over 25 years.
His poem's on the board. I was going to push that if you want to click on it, Hatter.
Okay. Give me a minute here. Whoa, that would hurt. Castlers, huh? Whoa. Okay, get the... Woo! Okay. What am I doing? Oh, poem, okay.
Click on Rat's poem.
Okay. Why isn't it here? There it is. Boy, my face just got all hot.
I'll take a deep breath and listen to Rackin' to while he reads.
Okay.
Christmas Stocking by Raconteur. The ebony night concealed my presence among the emerald bushes outside the window in the yard, hoping to catch a glimpse of what was. The reasons leaving hit me so hard. I remember an evergreen, standing resplendent in its place of honor, trimmed in quartz garland and poinsettia bows, its base swaddled in a ruby blanket, laden with festive gifts, its top adorned with a brilliant sapphire star, placed up there on tippy-toes. The son I lost, and daughter who learned to hate me, opening presents in periwinkle pajamas, jubilant around the tree. I once told them, I want to guard your dreams and visions, but I never knew leaving would become the mitigating factor in my decisions. A saline prism forms, tracing the edges of my cheek, glittering like jewelry, articulating the words I cannot speak. The sound of a motorcycle in the distance shook me from my reverie, eyes functioning as if coated in beeswax, reliving every memory. Cleaning my face, I slip away to prepare for the bleakness of tomorrow, promised by the emptiness of today. Headed home to cold sandwiches and beer, haunted by eyes that once adored me, but now radiate distrust of the dad they won't let near. End poem.
Sounds very
my ass
personal.
This time.
Yeah. I once told them I want to guard your dreams and visions, but I never knew leaving would become the mitigating factor in my decisions. Very personal, right?
Yeah.
And I love how you use the song lyrics.
You kind of want to take into account what you think the artist was thinking when they wrote it, you know? That
which song
statement,
is?
From
which
song
that,
that line from the song.
Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah.
Hatter?
Yeah, which the line?
Oh, I want to guard your dreams and visions.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It should be in the author's notes. I hope I put
it
in
the author's notes. The song itself is Born to Run. The quote is, I want to guard your dreams and visions. And then he says, I want to ride with you on the streets tonight in an everlasting kiss. Tramps like us. Maybe we were born to run. Yes.
Deb, why don't you find something to make me cry?
Find something to make you cry? No.
Yeah.
Alcohol, shots and crying don't go well.
No. I don't mean that. I mean, okay. Just choke me up a little bit. I want to feel something. Okay.
I'm looking.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we were talking about before to look up the life of somebody that had died early in life, a musician or somebody famous. I think that's the best part of the music shows that I have that I did, because I got to research the life who it was, and 50% of the time I was totally wrong of what I thought I knew about the musician, about the artist.
Right.
The other 50% was usually pretty close, but there was so much more that they did in their life. It's like Genesis, Peter Gabriel. I remember reading about him. What a stud, man! I mean, the dude is a humanitarian. he's not a selfish person, and he lives the life of his passions, you know. The other one was in the Shondells.
Tommy James.
Yeah, Tommy James. Thank you. Yeah, Tommy James. Man, he was promoted from this other DJ who had listened to him when he played. His first hit was and the guy made like 300 copies of it and went to New York and passed them out, and he was invited to RCA and these other big Columbia, these other big recording companies. So he packed his stuff up and went to New York, and every time he went to one of the recording, they said, no, we don't want to hear you. No. So he goes, you guys invited me. What happened was the roulette, I think it was roulette, a recording company was owned by the mob. This guy went around to all the other ones and said, you do not sign this guy, he's mine. And so nobody would talk to Tommy James when he got there. So he ended up playing, being funded by the mob at first. And he was reborn. He said it was a good thing because they didn't see any money for years and years. He was under contract by this mob figure. And he said, you know, it was a blessing when he became reborn in a motel room one night. Understood that if he would have gotten that money, if he'd have been worth millions before he came to the state of mind he had being reborn, he said, I would have probably died. So it was a blessing. He never told the story until the guy had passed away or went to jail. Then he had told the story of. He played for the mob. He funded millions. All those Crystal Blue Persuasions, Crystals, Crimsons and Clovers, all those hits were. He never got a dollar. The band never got a dollar for it. They were under contract. They were forced to.
Yeah,
it's a hell of a story. Hell of a story. He came out. He was going to be. He wrote a book. I haven't heard anything about it lately. In the last couple of years. So I don't know if the book is out there. Very interesting life, man. Yeah, he didn't know who this guy was until about 2 years into his contract that he was working for the mob.
Right. Yeah, it's insidious the way that they operate. You know, someone's pulling the strings in the background, like you said, to manipulate him. You know, you can't sign him; he belongs to us. And then, you know, when they get him to sign on the dotted line, they own his ass.
He was scared to death to not sign, not to keep under him.
Because they threaten you. Yeah.
Oh yeah, one of the band members or family's gonna come up missing.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the stories that you probably will never hear. But like I said, researching that, everybody, Bob Dylan, the awards Bob Dylan has gotten in his lifetime took up 3 pages. I only read one page. It just goes on and on and on and on. And I mean, big awards, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, Lifetime Awards. But I'm gonna have to do another music show here pretty soon.
That's not a bad thing.
Well, we're starting the new year. This is when we reevaluate everything, and I've had my plate's been full for quite a while this year with the surgeries and stuff. So I apologize, I haven't been able to put the time in that I should. Deborah covers for me. Thank you, Deborah. But hopefully this next year will be different once I get my titanium hips in. I'm shopping for the sport model. Then I find out I'd have to have my surgery on my hand too, so I'll be the bionic man here pretty soon. Fighting crime. All right. Deborah, give us a memory. Trip. Okay. Oh, man. It's supposed to get easier. That wasn't. All righty, then.
Click on the link on the board.
I tried to get Joy to come on the radio. She won't do it.
Oh.
So maybe I'll take my phone in the other room. Put her on the spot.
I don't know. Maybe she'll kick your butt. But anyway, you remember you asked to cry and click on the poem.
Which one? I don't see it. Oh, I'm in the wrong line. Hold on. I'm in the wrong group. Hold on.
That helps.
Damn. You get these face flushes. Whoa. Okay.
Hold on.
I grabbed the show, not this thing. Hold on.
That's all right. Just tell me when you're ready.
Okay. Team of voices. There they are. Now, who talked?
I don't know. Who the hell talked? Nobody talked. I added the link for the show in case somebody popped up.
See, now it threw me all back. Hold on. I'm in the hallway.
Are you torturing Jory now?
Okay, hold on. I know how to do this. I've done this before. And the team of voices. Nobody say anything. I'm here. Team of voices. There you go.
Chat. Group messages.
Whew. Journey. A lifelong journey.
Ready?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
All right.
A Lifelong Journey in 3 Minutes by Deborah Lee. Silent movie clips roll in my brain as I share my journey. Shut your eyelids tight and listen. Only closed eyes will get to see. My words paint a lifelong story, a childhood filled with wishes and wonder, jam-packed with love and infectious giggles, each Christmas an avalanche of gifts, little girl birthday bashes, summer vacations, Easter egg hunts, and trick-or-treat. Daddy gave raspberry tummy tickles. Mommy spread light bunny kisses, like butterfly kisses, but sweeter. Mama wore the wings of the tooth fairy and the hat of the hand holder. She and Daddy made the rules and were the keepers of huge warm hugs. Mom's nurse's cap, falling teardrops, were gently dried. She kissed boo-boos all better. Next, baking soda paste cures to soothe bee stings as I cried. She gave and gave and gave to everyone. Teen years a bit tougher. We butted heads often. Too many I'm sorry's, but at least they were said. Remember when you hated to admit Mom could be right? Then I grew up. Adulthood's grip grabbed a hold. Pulled up my big girl panties and set routines. Got married, had children. Someone says you're just like your mother, and I smile. With a roller coaster of ups and downs, life's no fairy tale, but it's loaded with bliss. And then, slam, a nightmare grabs the short hairs, yanking so hard you see blinding stars. Our world falls off its axle to free fall, into chasms of grief and darkness. You hear the words, and they hit like an atomic bomb. At first, it will not compute. Then, there's an out-of-body experience. It can't be. Terminal diagnosis? No. Mommy has cancer? Stage 4? No, no, no. Reason to smile, biggest supporter, my first best friend, no. My mom has pancreatic cancer. She's a warrior, my family's warrior. Tough as nails, as Daddy always said, her staggering bravery, a sight to behold. I hate cancer. She fought hard, struggled fiercely, won many little battles, but cancer took and took and took. Cancer made her ache inside and cry agonizing tears outside. Cancer ate at her body. At the end, on that rainy, stormy day, with 13 of us filling her room, surrounding her, holding her hands and whispering, I love you, I love you. She breathed one last breath. Then cancer stole my mommy and an angel carried her away. Cancer kills. Cancer kills. It kills. Cancer won the war. Cancer won the war, but heaven has another angel now. I love you, Mommy. I miss you every minute of every day. When I hear a person say she's just like her mother, there are no nicer 6 words they can speak until we meet again. I love you.
Wow. Yeah, it's something you knowing the inevitable, but you don't dwell on it, and when it hits you, everything changes. Wow, Deb. Cancer took my mommy. I think that's the hardest thing. Like with my dad went, he went fairly quickly after surgery. But to see the strong, like you said, the matriarch of the family, the leaders, the ones who put the rules down, the one who carried you, the one who made you better when you hurt. Seeing them fade away is, you can't be ready for it. You can say you are, but you're not. It's something that we all go through. And it's a terrible, terrible right, but it's a beautiful thing, Deborah. Back with the thing. Rack, you still there?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I missed the first half of what you said when you said I didn't catch it. You saying Rack? Sorry. What can you say? You know, it's knowing someone's got a terminal illness. It's hard to watch the people that you care about in pain, and when there's nothing that you could do about it, you know. You want to believe every little victory is like, you know, maybe they're wrong. You cling to that hope, and then, you know, life rears its ugly head and snatches it away. It's just horrible to try and deal with. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, that term terminal in stage 4.
To me, those are just words. It's watching it happen, you know. The words kind of don't sink in until you see the look in their eyes, the color drain from their cheeks, the pain in their voice, And 9 out of 10 times, you know, the person tries to hide it to spare everyone else their feelings. You know, I don't want to worry you. I don't want you to worry about me. You know, don't worry about me. And you know, that's the reality that's more heartbreaking than anything, you know. You talk about fate and, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be and everything else. I can wrap my mind around. It's, you know, well, that means that, you know, tomorrow they might be gone. You know, that reality is kind of there anyway, but you know, now that it's like more of a certainty, it's sobering. It's one of those things that's like kind of makes you reevaluate everything.
Yeah, it's the helplessness, too, you feel. I mean,
yep.
This is your mom and dad. It's what they helped you when you hurt. They nursed you when you were down your whole life. And then that happens, and you want to be able to help them. And you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Helplessness of it. But test, it's a test. I think when we meet, take our last breath, it's the last humility of life.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to experience it, and they'll all be there waiting. And they say, well, why doesn't somebody come back and tell us that they're there? Would you come back to this plane of existence if you could go anywhere and your consciousness has been set free? Yeah.
Well, you know, your memories and your anchors are kind of here. You know, I think, you know, if people could communicate from the other side, they would. Some people are attuned to hear those things.
Yeah, you know, God probably says you can't do it. Okay, that's the one thing you can't do. There'll be eternity. Only seems like a long time because, like you said, Rack, we get short with the expanse of time and space. What we've discovered where we are and in the universe and everything, we get short changed. We, you know, we'll live 80 years, and when you're talking in a galactic type of terms, you're talking.
Yeah.
Millions of years, you know, millions and millions of years. And we're there for 60, 80. We get shortchanged.
You're lucky.
Yeah, you're lucky. But, yeah, so this time of year, we're celebrating the end of the year. It's Christmas. It's all about giving. Random acts of kindness is what I used to live my life. I'd find something to do for somebody I didn't know. And I'll tell you, it got tougher and tougher. People got really untrust. Didn't trust you when a stranger walks up to them. And
you have to want something.
You know,
yeah. What's the catch?
You know,
what's the catch?
Exactly. Yeah. And they can't believe you're there to help, you know. We did this one. I remember this one old man, there was a, he, a fence went down, and I guess the neighbor told me that his wife had died the year before, and he was there. He was in his 80s or something. There's no way he's going to build this fence. So I talked to the neighbor, and I saw the guy's car gone and went over there. And he said, no, he's going to be gone for until the end of the weekend. So I got my buddies together. We built that fence and put it up for him, and took off. So he came home, and he didn't have to worry about the fence. I mean,
that's cool.
I love doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
nice
when you do something like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, when you do that, you look for people. I remember, real quick, there's an interchange of the freeways here in Sacramento it's probably the worst place to have a breakdown or a flat tire. The worst, because two interstates are merging.
Yeah.
I see this lady with a flat tire in a bad place. So by the time I get over, I'm like a mile down the road. So I'm backing up to her. And when I get to her, she just runs up and throws her arms around me. Her car was loaded with stuff to move her daughter. She was following her daughter. And she goes, I don't even know where she is now because she had a flat tire. I take all the clothes out of the trunk. I change the tire. The tire is bald. It's just as bad. So I tell her, you need to go to the CHP office, because she didn't even know where to go. But she cried the whole time. I'd never been hugged so hard in my life.
Yeah, it's just nice to make a difference in someone's life. It is.
Well, you know what? Nobody else was going to do it. Nobody was going to pull over at that spot.
Yeah, it had to be me.
So, and she probably remembers it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Every time she hears the fire, it goes thud.
I found a wallet in the supermarket once, and I put it in my pocket and I looked at the ID and I looked around. There was nobody there. Looked through that wallet after leaving it. I found one phone number and it happened to be his daughter. And she said, I told him that I had found his wallet and I don't know how to get a hold of him. So I gave him my number. He calls me back and we meet at the store that I found it in. And it was an elderly couple. They had just cashed their social security checks. That was rent and food for the month. And it was all, they had a couple hundred bucks. I don't know how much money was in there, but I handed it back to them. And you should see when they saw that all the money was there. They wanted to pay me. They wanted to give me. I go, no.
I didn't do anything.
Didn't do anything. But, you know, you sort of justify and reinvent the human spirit when you do that for people. Tell you that there are honest people.
If I was
to take that money, there's no way I could spend it. There's nothing I could do to enjoy some of that money. No way.
It means more to them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. They'd have been short on rent and probably starving at the end of the month. So,
especially if they didn't get the wallet back.
Well, I remember it was that Christmas time. It was between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I don't know how close it was, but finding that wallet there was like, man.
Yeah, you put yourself in that position. How would I feel if I lost my wallet? You know.
Oh yeah. It did happen to me. I left my organizer. It had $100 worth of winning lottery tickets in it, and it had $20 and personal information and stuff. And I left it at a Starbucks, and I freaking zipped back up. I called first, and she said, "Yeah, it's here." The lady that was sitting next to me apparently had walked it up. She knew. She said, "I know who it is, but I don't know who the guy is." So, and it was all there. just when you lose faith in the human race, something happens to you.
Usually,
you get it back. Yeah, you get it back. But Deb, that was a
heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I pulled my heart out. Yeah. But it's the type of poem where you got to step back and look at what you got. And if you think it can't get worse, don't believe it. It can. It can get a lot worse. So you take what you got. I got a roof over my house, a food in my belly, and a warm place to sleep. So, you know, I am grateful for that.
Yeah.
Because it could have been different. It could have been a lot different. I was homeless for a little while. I'll tell you what. I wouldn't have made it. I don't know how they do it. The soul is taken from you. And when I said the cold, there's nothing cold, more cold than the cold when you're homeless.
Yeah, I've unfortunately never experienced that, but.
Well, and I hope nobody does. Deb, how long ago did you write that? Was that 2 years? Yeah.
Nah, probably closer to 6, I think.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow. I'd be grateful for what you got, man. That's one thing that I don't think people realize. I'm sorry?
I'm pointing at it now. It says, hold on. What isn't it doing?
Hey, Deb, we still have sweat.
Yeah.
We still got sweaty balls. We still got sweaty balls.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Deb, do you still have sweaty balls? That's a loaded question.
You know what I mean.
I'm not Yeah, I'm just not even touching that one, and you know, it's like
not touching it. Yeah, how many times have I heard that?
Yeah,
I ain't touching that.
If I had a quarter every time someone said that to me.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, wrong show, guys.
Sorry.
Like, yeah, but. I know that somewhere in this mess, it's not making sense that I haven't seen them. I know I did not take it away.
It's like the number three funniest of all time SNL skit.
Okay. So now that I see
Molly Shannon, Anna Gastar, and that's okay.
Hello, I'm Margaret Jo McCullen.
And I'm Terry Rialto.
And you're listening to The Delicious Dish on National Public Radio. Now, Terry, it's Christmas season again, our favorite time of year.
That's right, Margaret Jo. Holiday time is when the most wonderful culinary wishes can come true. Now, what's on your list this holiday season, Margaret Jo?
Well, Terry, I really got greedy this year. I'm asking Kris Kringle for a wooden bowl, some oversized index cards, and a funnel.
Ooh, a funnel. That'll be great for funneling.
I know. I feel like a glutton. What's on your list, Terry?
Well, I'm only asking Santa for one thing, a big box of glue traps to help me deal with my excessive rat problem. Now, tell me, are you, Margaret Jo, going to leave any treats out for Santa this year?
Oh, absolutely. I always do. I like to leave Santa some tap water and rice. If Santa's anything like me, Christmas foods really wreak havoc on the old digestive system. What are you going to leave, Terry?
I can't ever leave food out in my apartment because I have an excessive rat problem.
Hey, Santa's fun.
Santa's fun.
Neat. Santa's fun.
Fun. Like
good
times.
Good times.
Good times.
Well, Christmas is a time for traditional foods and bite-sized treats, and we have a very special guest today.
That's right, Terry. He's the owner of his own holiday bakery with a very, very clever name. Seasons Eatings.
That's really funny.
I know, it rhymes with Seasons Greetings.
Please welcome the owner of Seasons Eatings, Pete Schwede.
Hi, Pete. Welcome. How are you?
Welcome, Pete.
We like the name of your store.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh. Now, did I pronounce your name correctly?
You sure did. Pete Schwede.
Well, Pete, Terry and I have been looking forward to having you on the show because we know you're the master of all kinds of Christmas goodies. Tell us about them.
Well, there are lots of great treats this time of year. Zucchini bread, fruitcake. But the thing that I most like to bring out at this time of the year are my balls.
About your balls, Pete.
Well, over at Seasons Eatings, we have balls for every taste. Popcorn balls, cheese balls, rum balls, you name it.
Wow. My mouth's watering just thinking about those balls.
It's been years since I've seen any balls.
Would you like to see my balls now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whip them out.
Whip them, baby. You have some beautiful balls.
They're bigger than I expected.
I know a lot of people tell me that.
Look at that, Terry, the way they glisten.
That's because I make sure that each one of my balls gets plenty of oil.
I can't help but notice, Pete, your balls are a little misshapen.
That's because I've rested them on a hot stove for too long.
Can I touch your balls?
Go ahead, but be careful. They're very delicate.
Wow. I can't wait to get my mouth around this ball.
Ooh, I like the way your balls smell.
Do whatever you want to them, ladies. My balls are here for your pleasure.
Wow, Pete, I have to say your balls are so tender.
Well, there's no beating my balls. They're made from a secret sweaty family recipe. No one can resist my sweaty balls.
Nothing like a sweaty ball.
Sweaty ball.
Good times.
Good times.
Good times.
Oh, our producer Glenn is gesturing to us from the technician's booth, and it looks like very good. He's telling us to wrap it up.
I guess that's all the time we have today, Terry. So join us next week when our topic will be that other holiday favorite,
fragrant salty nuts.
Hey, quick plug. If you order from Season's Eatings now, we can still send out a special sweaty ball sack in time for Christmas.
Ooh, great idea. My niece would love a sack of sweaty balls.
That's pretty funny. I hope it was cutting in and out. I hope it played right on the...
It played perfectly for me. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I was wondering if they were going to mention the nuts.
Hey, meatballs.
Hey, Tom, you know the blue-collar comedy guys. Did you ever see the skit they do about a big deck?
Yep. Yep. He's got the biggest deck.
I've got
a whole skit written out for that. I was going to try to force on my fellow.
I bet you got
radio.
A big deck, Hatter.
He used it.
Yeah, picking up the whole 20 people, I heard.
He had to have the biggest deck. Yeah, he had wood rot. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Well, I know AP's jealous of the size of your deck. Anyway.
Yeah, that pushes the line, too. It's got the...
Did you ever have Kay on your deck?
What? Yeah, he painted his deck.
Oh.
But the one, of course, the biggest one.
I just waxed my deck.
Buffed it. Yeah, they. Yeah, funny. I'll have to find that because that's another funny.
That sticks. It gets us
started. Yeah, that was actually on the Jeff Foxworthy show.
Yeah.
To do little skits. Yeah, cool. That's right. What was I looking for? I was looking for a piece. I remember spending Christmas Eve in the hospital one year.
Yeah.
I told this last year. I was roomed with another guy because they were empty in the hospital. He didn't have to be in there. They were getting everybody out. I was there because my surgery was the last one at the hospital, and I get put in the room with another guy who's got a leg injury also, but he was a nurse at the hospital.
Yeah.
So he ordered two wheelchairs, and next thing I know, we're out on the little balcony. Yeah. Because what are you going to do, kick us out? I don't think so. It's pretty funny. Maybe I should find it. Think I should, Deb?
Wheelchair on the balcony story.
Yeah. What was it? Oh,
yeah.
Christmas High.
You and your friend. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it was, I remember just being stressed out because I knew my coach, my football coach, and my parents were going to hear about this, and I'm going to be in flipping trouble. They never heard about it. They didn't say. But the guys that came up got us were two, I never seen the two big security guys. They had to lift us out because we couldn't get out of the wheelchairs. On the walk. Yeah. Yeah, but enough said. They took our wheelchairs away, so we could do it.
I wrote a story about when I was in my car accident. If Deb wants to read it, it's called Another Nail in my Coffin. So when I got in my car accident, I think it was around 2015.
Okay, this one I never went and cleaned up. It's sort of rough, but the story that's told is pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's my show, so guess what? I get to read it. There we go. Boom. And where it's there. Tell me when you get it.
I can't see. You could read it to me, though. I'll hear
Okay. It's called Christmas High. Picture two guys in wheelchairs in the hallway. Spending a winter's vacation in a hospital room seemed like no fun. It was scheduled that fall season and on vacation, so I would be there at Christmas time. I thought of a Christmas not something I wished. Not this time for spring training, I had to do
it. Come with the microphone.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. I had to do it then. Knee surgery was a big deal due to the recovery time it took to get back to healthy. Noticing most of the floor was emptying out at Christmas, I noticed the nurse patient ratio had turned into my favor. Too many nurses is not a bad thing. Until I was told a roommate was moving in. My visions of sponge baths, beautiful nurses didn't quite have the same effect knowing there was going to be someone else in my room. But they had me where they wanted me. Charlie was his name, and he worked as a nurse in the same hospital. He was having leg surgery also, so we both were in casts. Charlie seemed as cool as they come, and he knew all the things we could get away with. Charlie asked me if I was cool. And if I partied, I nodded, not expecting what came next. He left for us and to get around in if he wanted. That night was Christmas Eve, and after the day shift left, Charlie told me to mount up he had a plan. We wheeled our chairs to the slider door and lifted them up while collapsed. And lowered them outside onto the ledge. It was just wide enough to get the chairs out there back to back. I looked down at the entrance to the hospital. People coming and going before as we were we were six floors above them, shushing each other to not make any noise. Then Charlie lit it up, passed it over his shoulder. Here you go, bud. He said, we sat there in wheelchairs getting our Christmas high. Small talk about where we both came from and what got us here at this time of the year. Finishing the first joint, I started wondering how can we get back in. It was easy coming out, getting out. The dimensions did not work the other way. We couldn't help each other. this way it sounds, and we were stuck. We smoked two more joints, passing them back and forth. When the cold set in, the temperature must have dropped 20 degrees, and we had to figure out how we were going to get our wheelchairs and ourselves back in the room. I asked you've been here before. How did you do it? He says, I've never done this before. He told me, just thought about it earlier. He said, we're stuck for sure. I started to worry about Charles laughed. He said, just yell for help. I'm sure there's someone who's going to get us. That's when the laughing started and the one-liners. The laughing got out of control, and it wasn't long before we were noticed. What do we do now? I thought. And before we knew it, flashlights were on us, and the voices telling us to not jump. Not jump? Oh, my God. Charles could not talk. He was laughing too hard. Finally, he said, I'm not jumping. Okay, I won't jump, but I don't know about him. Charles yells down at the gathering crowd while pointing up at me. We're not jumpers, I yelled back. Just putting out some Christmas lights. He started laughing again, sort of that laugh when you know you're busted and there's nothing you can do about it. Charles was trying to straighten up, but looked back at me. They're coming for us, you know. I'm still laughing, trying not to get it under control, too many gear.
And boy, you
are
in trouble. What the hell?
You died.
You're losing.
Yeah. You faded.
Okay. Okay. I'll go back to the little one. So who's they, Charlie? Were they coming to get us? Trying to be serious. The man, he's coming to get us, and boy, you are in trouble. What the hell? Between trying to catch my breath and wondering what was going to happen, I about choked. The crowd below had gathered, and the lights hitting us. We were like prisoners making a break for it with gun-power lights pinning us down. Up against the wall, Charlie yells at me, assume the position, kid. I begged Charlie to stop, and I saw the light in our room go on. Just then, the slider doors opened. Four nurses and a couple of security guards grabbed us like we were actually going to jump. Then they started helping us back into our room. We were getting a barrage of questions, why, when, how, but no answers were going to happen anytime soon. We were laughing too hard. Contagious laughter is just that, contagious. The nurses and security guards were laughing with us. For the first time, I actually thought we were not going to get in any trouble. But in the back of my mind, I knew this was going to get back to my parents and my doctors, my coaches, and it was not going to be good. Charlie looked over at me and just as we helped into our beds and asked me, did you think we were going to get kicked out of here? I chuckled for days after thinking about us on that ledge. Nothing was ever mentioned to me by anyone. I guess nobody wanted to say anything, as they might have gotten in trouble also. Needless to say, the wheelchairs were taken out of our room. Charlie had it all figured out. Merry Christmas, Charlie, wherever you are. So the hospital stay, I had one December Christmas Eve, was the best I remember.
Wow.
That's a true story.
That's wild. I can't picture the two of you sitting back to back, but, you know, the passing of the joint I can picture. It's funny. I never really got into that until I was over 50 years old. I never smoked. But when I did, I kind of embraced it.
At that time, I really hadn't either. I was still a jock. But the guy was too cool. I wonder what happened to Charlie, man.
Yeah. I hear Deb giggling.
Yeah, no, I didn't remember this one because a couple of us were saying, try not to picture them with nothing on but their hospital gowns. You know, they stand up and
right.
That's true.
World.
That's,
yeah.
That's,
but
it was flipping cold.
Well, this is why your mom told you should write a book, and I agree. He's got crazy stories, Rock and Tour, that you would think that your best people were making up for a movie or something. But now I think next time we get together, I'll have to tell you about the cross country run from coyotes. But listen, Heather, I need to read for Rack do a song and shut down. So,
okay.
I think I just put his on the board so that you can click on it, and then I'll read from him. Didn't I? Where the hell did the group go? There's the group. Yes, Rack and Chores is on the board, so if you click on his poem, I'll read.
That's a story more than a poem.
Just as ever now. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Just another nail in my coffin by Rock and Tour. And here we go. Neither of my feet fall flat, so I can't walk very well. But I can't complain. I should be dead. I blacked out doing about 65 miles an hour and drove across four lanes of oncoming traffic. Not that I remember any of that after I did black out. What do I remember about the accident? It happened on Palm Sunday, 2015. I was leaving a friend's house to go home in the early afternoon. Ironically, I would use the phrase, I took every precaution. I remember everything from before I got the car down, how I positioned my legs. I had a bad habit of actually sitting on my left leg that a friend had pointed out would result in serious injury if I got in an accident. So before my trip began, I was conscious that I was positioned properly behind the wheel. I was unimpaired by any stimulus. The weather was clear. I knew the way and the route was well lit. I blacked out sometime between 3 and 4. I was in the left lane of Route 80 West, and I drove off the roadway through the median to the eastbound side and across oncoming traffic, striking the exit 35 some, going into the grass, up an embankment, and hitting two trees before coming to rest and catching on fire. Not sure how long I was out. But I do remember coming to for a few minutes while they were extricating me from the car with the jaws of life and other various saws and crowbars. I had no idea the car had even been on fire. All I knew was that they were working on separating me from the wreck. I noticed the windshield was gone, and I heard them working. I saw the various pieces of my suspension strewn in front of my car, and I tried talking to the guys. I saw just before what I used to be the front end. I was concerned about what the bits and pieces of motor may have hit before landing where they were. I asked, did any of that go through my leg? I don't know why I singled out my leg. That's what came out. He remained professional, and the only response he would repeat was, don't worry, sir. Just relax. We're going to get you out of there. When I realized he wasn't going to tell me anything else, my eye drifted down to my left leg. Had I looked at my right, I would have saw that my foot was almost completely seared off. But I looked at my left leg. My pants were flecked with blood and punch marked with tears and holes. And what memory do I take from this accident? What do I think before blacking out blackening out before being airlifted to the hospital? Oh, shit. I like those payments. What an ending.
True story, hey?
Right now,
yeah.
Did I put the picture of the car on that?
I was just going to ask you if that was, yes, is that, that is the car?
That's what I walked away from, yes. I was in that car.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Oh, sorry. Wow.
Yeah. They were gonna move me to the parking lot nearby, and they decided the accident was too severe. They actually shut down 80 and landed the helicopter on the highway to airlift me. And I was in the hospital for 6 months and rehab for a year after that. Well, the miracle of it is, you know, like I said in the story, I kind of hinted at it. My legs, it was only below my waist. I fractured my C3 vertebrae, but, you know, that was a minor injury. I wore one of those puffy collars for a while, and that was it. Oh, you know? That healed fine. My legs were what was messed up. My right foot was they called it beyond amputate on the mangle scale. It was severed 270 degrees, and they sewed that back on. I've got a plate and springs and pins to make my foot go up and down, but it works as it is. and on my left leg, they replaced my tibia with a rod, and I've got all kinds of scar tissue in my meniscus and calcified tendons, so my right leg doesn't straighten out. It's at a permanent kind of curve. So my foot doesn't fall flat on either foot, so I have to use either a walker or a cane. And that puts a strain on your back if you try and walk like that, you know. They call it's like ballerina toes. Like, I'm on the balls of my feet more than I'm on the flats. So I can't really walk straight. So between that and not being able to see, I'm really disabled.
How old were you?
It was 2015, so 5 years ago. Seven years ago, so I was about 50.
Yeah. In my accident, I was 19. My right leg was dislocated and facing the wrong way, I guess. But that was the least of my worries. They didn't have to pry. They didn't have to cut me out of the truck. There was nothing left of the truck. But there were like eight miracles that saved me.
When they got me to the hospital, I remember before they put me under anesthesia, I was awake, and the anesthesiologist was arguing with my mother. I'm not putting him under. I don't want him dying on my table. He was refusing to put me under. The anesthesiologist was refusing to put me under. And I was awake listening to him saying he's going to die.
Yeah, I kept going in and out of consciousness, and it happened that a good friend of mine's mom was the head ER nurse at the hospital. She recognized me, but I didn't really recognize her because I was looking out of one eye at the time. And I remember when she came in and she goes, "Okay, we're going to give you a shot. We're going to let you go to sleep." And I just looked at her and said, "Thank you." Asked my dad years later. Why mom didn't come and see me. They allowed my dad in there into the room. I remember waking up, looking up, and my dad's there, and I'm showing him my hand and how messed up I am. I asked him years later. I said, "Well, how come mom didn't go there?" She goes, "Son, I was there to watch my son leave to die. You weren't supposed to make it."
Yeah.
They just said that the. Like I said, I was ready to go play college football, so I was in great shape. And he said, "That's what all he's got going for him." So there's one miracle after the next. I think what most mad I was when I was told they were going to cut my hand off. They were going to amputate my hand. And my dad says, "No, you're not." They couldn't touch me for almost three days because I was so too shocky to go to more operations.
Right.
During that time, my dad got the best from Stanford University, from Houston, neurosurgeons and a hand surgeon, and got him up to do the work for me. And I think I was pissed when they told me they were going to cut my hand off. My dad said, "No, they weren't. I wasn't going to let them." And that's what he said. He said, "You don't understand. He's a wide receiver and a defensive back. You can't take his hand." And then I still got it. I use it quite often, but another one was my eye. The right side of my face was crushed, and they thought for sure I was going to be blind in my eye, and they didn't tell me. So when they came out, they made a big deal. "Oh, you can see what?" Like, "What do you think?" "Well, we thought the damage to the orbit of your eye." I go, "Well, you didn't tell me. You tell me I can be blind." But yeah, thank the Lord, huh? That sounds like you're a pretty bad one too, man. Damn.
You had someone watching over you for sure.
Yeah, I went for a wild ride.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah, I guess it was I was a passenger in a 64 GMC Chevy truck. It had no seatbelts. If I had been in a seatbelt, I would have died. I've been gone with the load of the truck.
Getting ejected.
I'm sitting. Yeah, it rolled. It rolled 7 to 11 times. This officer said.
Yeah.
And I went for the ride. And I was found underneath it. But Deb wants to keep going. Go ahead, Deb. Let's. We got one more to read.
A song.
Actually,
a song.
What I would like to do is I'd like to for you to say your piece. Wrap up, and then I'll read something real quick about the final song and shut down the show because, like, I need to go.
Okay. Rack, thanks for calling and hanging with us, man, on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, man.
The Andorians, Mrs. Nemesis, Steve M. McKay, thank you for calling in. All the members that call in, Sky, Pretty Bird, Crystal Hope, Sweet Pea, Becky, Wayne, Frank. I'm missing a lot. And if I just draw a blank. Laughing Soul, Liquid Damage. Yeah, I love you all. You all make this radio gig pleasurable. And I think we're getting better at it. Merry Christmas. I think that's my thing. We got tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we'll be Hatter Day Saturday with AP Taylor and Deborah Lee and myself. We'll be talking about. I know what this is.
Song parody.
It is song parodies.
Song parodies.
Christmas song parodies. So make us laugh. Take a song and put some Christmas lyrics in it and have a good time. That'll be 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 Pacific. We'll see you on Christmas night. Okay, Deb.
Okay. And, Rack, I'm really glad you called. It was cool that you called to hang out with us. Pretty heavy conversations, but I have to say to both of you, I for one am very, very glad that you've had your little chain of goals that kept you here. It had to happen. At least you had all the right stuff happen to stay on Earth with us. So I'm appreciative of that too. And before we finish out, I just want to say Merry Christmas to all the listeners out there. We are heading into the last week of the year, working our way up to Hatter's New Year's Eve show, where we give away 100,000 points to our group members. So we have that to look forward to. In the meantime, I'm going to read you something about a song in just a second.
Are you going to sing, Deb?
That's a good bark.
I'm sorry? I'm not drinking. So I'm not going to bark.
No, are you
going to
sing?
Too. Oh, yeah, right. No, I'm not going to sing. I think that you might need your ears. But what I am going to do is I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about this song. I just want to have it in the right spot so it's ready. And then, okay, now I'm going to play a collaboration, actually, between Bowie and Bing Crosby. And they did a song called Peace on Earth, Little Drummer Boy. It's a mix. It's a Christmas song performed by English singer-songwriter David Bowie and American Bing Crosby, recorded on the 11th September in 1977 in London. The little, Cosby is singing the 1941 standard version of the Little Drummer Boy, while Bowie sings the counterpoint tune, Peace on Earth, written by the special musical supervisors, Ian Fraser and Larry Grossman, and scriptwriter Alan Cohen, specifically for this collaboration. The duet was one of Cosby's final recordings before his death in October of 1977. And this is Peace on Earth and the Little Drummer Boy, a collaboration. Merry Christmas, everyone. Love and respect.
And this one. This is my son's favorite. Do you know this one?
Oh, I do indeed. It's a lovely thing. Glad you came by to work out on the piano.
Spending the night with you guys. Love and respect.